welcome to Haunt Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're an actor or owner or just plain aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And once again, we return, this time with some exciting news that we're going to jump into.
Yeah.
But first off, your reminder with every podcast, if you have not done so already, please take a moment, follow us on Twitter at Haunt Weekly, follow us on Facebook at Haunt Weekly, subscribe to us in iTunes, Google Play, and wherever finer podcasts are distributed. They let us in. We have no idea why. But yes, do take a moment and do that. But first things first, we have something up, an announcement. And it's a bit abrupt.
Yeah, bet. Yeah.
A little bit abrupt. I'm not...
Causes a little bit of panic.
I'll get a lot of panic. I'm not going to explain how it happened, because honestly, I don't know how it happened.
Right.
But long story short, I found out this past week that I'm speaking at Halloween and Hauntfest.
Yes.
August 25th through 27th, and that in Dallas-Fort Worth at the Mesquite Convention Center. I will be giving at least one talk, maybe two. I'm an alternate
right.
for another talk. So if I have someone drop out, I may be a last-minute sub. The talk I will definitely be giving is on copyright and trademark for haunters, bringing my day job into my night life, night passion. Oh, that sounds terrible. Let's not call it that.
No, let's not. You probably should have workshopped that a little.
Yeah, I probably should. Probably should have done something with that. But anyways, yes, I'll be bringing my day job into... haunting a little bit there, and the second one, if they choose to run with it or if they need it or whatever, will be about how to develop websites that actually sell tickets.
Yeah.
So those are two things that I am looking forward to talking about. I definitely will be doing the copyright and trademark one. I do not have a schedule now. That schedule is supposed to come out soon. In fact, it should be now almost as this episode's getting released.
Right. And we'll be sharing that as soon as it's available.
And we'll be doing updates on Facebook primarily.
Yeah. And we both will be there.
Yes.
We will be bringing the mic. So if you are going to be there, not only check out our Jonathan's talk, but also consider scheduling time with us to sit down with the mic and talk for a little bit.
Yeah, we'd love to chat and learn more about you, what you do, and all the awesome ways you scare people. I definitely am looking forward to bringing this mic and getting some good conversations. And I don't know how we're going to edit or piece it together into an episode. We'll figure that out when we get there.
It may not be an episode. It may be an existential.
it may be an interstitial type thing.
Yes.
We don't know how we're going to use it. Because of the rush nature of this, we are improvising a lot.
Yes.
We improvised our travel, for example.
Yes.
We are definitely going, though, and as you'll know in a minute, it's going to be the first episode on the conference reminders. We'll go ahead and give the information again.
Yeah.
But we're very excited about this conference. We mentioned previously we might be going to this one.
We mentioned we might have news about it.
Yeah. And we were kind of coy at the time.
Yeah.
But long story short is, yes, I've been confirmed as a speaker. I am really excited about this conference. It looks awesome. Hoping to meet at least some of you there.
Yes.
So, yes, on that note, I guess it is time for conference reminders.
It is.
So.
Wonder what the first one's going
to
be.
I don't know. I've never heard of this conference. but yes, the first conference reminder is Halloween and Hauntfest Show, August 25th through 27th, Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, at the Mesquite Convention Center, which I now know is on the eastern side of the city, away from the airports, which is one of the challenges we kind of faced in trying to make all this work.
Yeah.
But anyways, it has lots of educational opportunities. Bing! I'm doing the winky smile, you just can't see it.
Yes,
lots of great...
Shameless self-promotion.
Indeed. Well, you know what? I wrote these notes before I found out I was speaking.
I know.
So to be fair, it wasn't meant to be.
Yeah.
But lots of great educational opportunities and a huge trade show floor. Learn more at HalloweenAndHaunt.com.
All right. Next up, in September 8th through 10th, we have Mask Fest in Indianapolis, Indiana, Marriott Indianapolis East. It's all about makeup effects and mask making, so if you're into that, check it out. Be sure to all the caveats about, you know, not
getting yourself sharing your mask.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't get sick right before season. That'd be bad. Maskfest.com for more info on that.
Yes. If you get sick a few weeks for opening, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah.
Yes. After that, it is Sinister Creature Con, October 14th and 15th. I recognize most people listening to the show will be otherwise engaged.
Yes.
But it is at the Scottish Rite Center in Sacramento, California, and it does all things horror, including filmmakers, makeup, and haunted attraction engineers and actors, sponsored in part by the Cemeterium Haunted House. I always want to say that wrong.
I know.
And Dire World Scare Part. Featured guests include Ted Raimi, Scott McDonald, Marky Ramone, and Uwe Boll. So bring your boxing gloves. He likes to box his critics.
Yeah.
True fact.
as opposed to a false fact.
Yes, indeed. But you can learn more at SinisterCreatureConSacramento.com. Yes, all one word.
Yes. Very good on that.
Thank you.
November 9th through 11th, so just after season, Legendary Haunt Tour will be taking place in Philadelphia, PA. Crown Plaza, Philadelphia, touring Field of Screams, Bates Motel and Haunted Hayride, and Reaper's Revenge. Legendary Haunt Tour with 2Ts.com for more info there.
Hey, can I just say Reaper's Revenge is a bitchin' name for a haunt?
It is.
I know nothing else about the haunt.
No.
But that is a bitchin' name, guys. Good work.
Yeah.
I got respect for that one. And finally on our current list, the HauntCon Halloween / Halloween and Party Expo. The name is a little confusing now.
Yeah.
Right here in New Orleans, Louisiana, January 12th through the 15th. At the Ernest and Memorial Convention Center, HauntCon.com to learn more. We will definitely be going to that.
Yeah.
I do not know if there will be further involvement.
Right.
But yeah. Oh, and by the way, speaking of HauntCon, if you saw the talk I did at HauntCon 2 years ago, was it?
Yeah.
I think it was the 2016 one. You've pretty much seen the one that I'm going to be doing in Halloween and HauntFest. Just being honest. Not a lot has changed, but it's in a topic that's important. I want to get it in front of as many haunters as I can.
Yeah.
That's how that one goes. All right, we have a few quick updates before we jump into this week's topic.
Okay.
First off, last week we mentioned, once again, we're getting information like right before deadlines.
Right.
We mentioned the Denifier Haunted House video request where they were trying to get haunters like us.
Right.
To send in videos about why they do what they do.
Yes.
And so that way they could put together a package video to sort of explain our industry a little better.
Right. And our passion about what we do.
Yeah. And that we're not just random weirdos that like, you know, dressing up in black and scare. You know what? We kind of are.
Kind of.
We kind of are. Maybe that's not a good message.
No.
But anyways, they have extended the deadline for that. The deadline was Wednesday. It has been extended indefinitely. We have to be honest and admit we're part of the problem, I believe.
Yeah.
We said we were going to do it, and we just ran into a lot of day job stuff.
Yep.
And could not get it done. We will be doing this, I guarantee it, probably yeah. before we go to HauntFest.
Yeah, probably sometime this week.
But here's the thing. Still participate, please. So
yes.
If you are interested in this project, I will read the questions again, and I will also link to them. I've got them on previous week's post.
Right.
And we'll link to them again here. But the questions to answer in your video. One, who are you? Where are you working? How long have you been haunting? What does haunting do for you? What do you do for a living? What's the difference between working in a haunt and other jobs? What are your coworkers like? How does it feel to get a good scare? Do you see yourself leaving haunting? What advice do you have for new haunters? All excellent questions, and I'm curious to see other people's responses to them.
Yeah.
So yeah, take the time, answer those questions in front of a camera, send it to the Denifier Haunted House, and they will hopefully piece it together, and you will be featured in a video package that the whole industry will be able to use.
Yes.
That sounds really cool.
It does.
Okay, another update, and
right.
Once again, learning stuff.
Well, we mentioned this last week that Don't Be a Monster auction was happening soon.
Yeah.
Well, it just wrapped up.
Yeah, it was less than a week, so it fell between our recordings.
Right. And, go ahead.
Yeah, but basically the auction finished up. They had over 35 different items.
Yeah, some of them really cool.
Yeah, some of them really, really cool, including tickets to several major haunted attraction concerts. Like, there were Transworld tickets being auctioned off.
Right.
All items sold. A couple of them sold for above value. Some very generous people out there. Most of them were actually quite good deals.
Yeah.
You got at least, 15-20% off most of those at the end of the day. And it was a tax-deductible donation, too.
Right.
So it's like a double win.
Yeah, so I will definitely be looking for this to come around next year.
No kidding. But anyways, the most expensive item, I actually checked it out, was a decapitated woman prop from Ghost Ride Productions, valued at $750. It sold for $800.
Yeah.
It was one of those items that went for above the actual stated value. So yes, congrats to Don't Be a Monster for the successful auction. Great charity, great work, and actually where Crystal is sitting now, she has a poster behind her, not hung up on the wall yet, because that...
I might have just gotten it into the frame, okay?
Like just minutes ago. But it looks beautiful, and we are going to put it somewhere. I mean, we have acquired so many posters over the years.
Yeah.
You might say we have a thing for them, but that's okay. All right, but yes, congratulations again to Don't Be a Monster for a very successful, very awesome auction.
Right.
All right. So this week's topic is probably going to attach a few heads and turn a few eyes.
Yeah.
But I want to be clear as I'm jumping into this that professional wrestling is admittedly a silly thing.
Yes.
Even the fans usually admit that it's a silly thing.
Yeah.
But that's fine. We in this industry love silly things. Haunting is kind of a silly thing.
Yeah, I've seen a few of you out there posting wrestling things, so I know at least some of you would be interested in this, too.
Yeah. Now, I have to admit my own personal narrative here. I was a professional wrestling fan as a kid.
Right.
And then I got back into it as a teenager, but I haven't really been a fan almost for exactly 20 years.
Yeah.
It's been 19 years. I actually checked and since the last time I actually watched a full wrestling program or attended a match.
Yeah. Back when... So my... pedigree in this is my mom still watches wrestling every week, probably 3 to 4 times a week.
Raw, SmackDown, and
exactly. I stopped watching it also about when I was a teen.
Yeah.
Well, I watched it and believed that it was real when I was tiny.
Yeah.
And then I met a wrestler who was a friend of mom's coworker, and he told me, "No, it's all scripted." And it's not. I understand that as an adult, but as a kid, it just broke my heart.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the term scripted is.
Yeah.
It's a work. It's booked. It's not scripted usually.
Yeah.
Usually, it's not scripted. But anyway.
Maybe his wasn't other smart.
maybe he took the time to actually script out every detail of his match.
Yeah.
If so, I would be damn impressed. Actually.
Yeah. No kidding.
I mean, there were some who did it, like Ricky Steamboat did it, and Macho Man did it.
Yeah.
So there were wrestlers who did exactly that, but not many, not most.
Right.
But anyways, I'm not saying, and we're going to get into some of the ways that we can learn from the negative experiences of wrestling
right.
in a minute. I'm not saying haunting should be like professional wrestling.
No.
But that being said... There are some interesting lessons that can be pulled from it.
Body slams in the parking lot.
My God, he's been put through the table. That man is broken in half.
He has just done a tombstone.
Well, that would be appropriate enough.
I know, exactly.
But yes, there are lessons that can be pulled. After all, fundamentally, wrestling is a storytelling medium. And this is something a lot of people don't really get.
Right.
Even when they call it a soap opera, they forget that wrestling is a storytelling medium.
Yeah.
But it's a non-traditional storytelling medium. And in that regard, haunting has a lot in common.
Yeah.
We're telling stories. Mm-hmm. We're getting people engaged. We're getting people to believe these tales, but it's not a traditional medium. We're not doing it through word or song. We're doing it through runes and scares and sets and all that stuff.
Right.
We're communicating in a different way. So by looking at how another non-traditional storytelling medium works, we might be able to glean things that we can use.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's actually the first point, is storytelling through action.
Yeah.
Now, of course, we know that there's big story arcs in wrestling. They can take years to unfold. And
yes.
Wrestlers do promos and backstab one another. And you got all the soap opera stuff. But here's the thing. Every match is also a story.
It is.
Every single match. Now, sometimes the story is just, you know, big guy beats the crap out of little guy, and that's the end of it.
Or other way around, occasionally.
But, you know, whatever. But every match tells a story without words.
Right.
And it's done, if you actually watch wrestling matches, the way it's communicated is primarily through body language, facial expressions, and the flow of the match.
Yeah.
Seeing the move, seeing what's going on, seeing who looks like they're hurt, seeing what they are look like they've hurt.
Yeah.
So on and so forth. It tells a narrative. And that narrative can be used to tell a fairly compelling story.
It can.
And when you go back to some of the, and once again, this is my knowledge of wrestling. I remember watching, for example, the Bret Hart-Steve Austin Iron Man match.
Uh-huh.
And you see the narrative they're telling there. Very, very compelling stuff. And this is something that we have to do. We oftentimes just think about what scare can we put in this room? How are we going to make this room, you know, scary without thinking about, well, what's also the narrative?
Right.
What story are we trying to tell these people? And part of that story is you have to set aside, you know, who's the victim? Who's the bad guy? How do you communicate who that is?
Right.
And furthermore, since we're in the haunted attraction industry, mm-hmm. how to play with those tropes a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
Victims can become killers.
Yeah.
You can completely use these exact tools to flip the script.
Yeah.
You can make someone act like they are in dire pain and like they're being tortured and tormented, and then turn around and be the mastermind.
Right. Yeah, I could see that working really well. I've also, while thinking about this, realized that a lot of the pain injuries, mm-hmm. you know, the grabbing the back, everything's exaggerated.
Yes.
So it's very clear where the person
exactly.
is hurt. But I could see someone pretending like they're in excruciating pain and then grabbing some kind of weapon and turning up and going after the crowd.
Or acting like they have a pronounced limp, for example.
Right.
And then running after them suddenly.
Yeah. That would work really well too.
Breaking out.
Yeah.
And going after them very, very quickly. So yeah, we can use this type of storytelling through action, not just to tell a story, but also to use the preconceived notions people have.
Right.
One thing, like when we talk to Japes all the time, is he talks about how, you know, you shouldn't say anything that you can spell with
right.
visuals. And I love that rule.
Yeah.
And it's made me rethink my own.
Not yell, at least.
Not yell. Not for the scare. If you can potentially spell it, don't use that as your scare yell.
Rawr.
Well, you know, that's R-A-W-R. See, that's exactly it. or boo is B-O-O.
Yeah.
But you can't spell.
Oh, yeah.
Not with English, at least.
Yeah.
But the point is, you know, one of the ways you can use nonverbal communication is through that type of storytelling. And speaking of which, that brings it to selling a move.
Mm-hmm.
Wrestling is acting
yeah.
at its fundamental core. Part of it, as we were discussing, is looking hurt when you aren't.
Right.
The facial expressions, the body language, all are crucial. Watch how wrestlers respond to a move, anything, a suplex, a body
right.
slam, whatever. It can even be a mundane move in a match. Watch how they respond, how they clutch their body part, how they spring up from the canvas.
Yeah.
How they sometimes, like, you'll see wrestlers, they'll do, like, a splash off the top rope, and they'll immediately clutch their chest and roll away like it hurt them.
Yeah.
Even though they're probably just as safe and as unhurt as ever. Watching how these, because I used to think for a long time, that like Rob Van Dam, he's a high-flying
yeah.
wrestler, would hurt himself every time he did the 5-star frog splash off the top rope because he would hit and then immediately, like I say, clutch his chest and roll away. But it turns out that's just his selling of his own move
right.
to indicate how badass he is that he would throw his body on the line like that. So, yeah, I mean, it's totally believable.
I'm sure
though.
He felt it.
Oh, I'm sure it didn't. Let me rephrase that. I'm sure it doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
But I'm sure also it's not nearly as painful as he sells it.
Right.
Because you swear he broke ribs every time he does
yeah.
it. And that's the thing. It's such a convincing sell. You can watch the expressions and emotions wrestlers make to learn how to sell your injuries in a haunt better.
Right.
It's such a beautiful thing, and it's something that you don't have to watch much wrestling to get a handle on it.
No.
Just find every, and there's like a handful of wrestlers out there that are like, wow, I'm convinced he's hurt.
Yeah.
Every time he does something. Shawn Michaels would be one I would say to look up his matches.
Yeah.
He always managed to look like he was in a world of hurt.
I would say Cactus Jack / Mankind / you know, Mick the list Foley. Goes on and on.
Mick Foley, yeah.
Yeah. But, some of his were actual hurts.
Yeah.
So I don't know if looking him up's a good idea.
I don't think it's acting to look like you're in pain when you've been like driven into a pile of thumbtacks. I don't think.
Well, I think some of that is.
Yeah.
But some of his other ones are just. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Long story short, like Shawn Michaels is one I immediately think of as someone that does a really good job selling moves and looking pained when he's not. Yeah, but getting that down, it's an art form.
Yeah.
And it's a type of acting that you frankly don't learn in, like, acting school a lot.
No, I think you'd have to go to, like, stuntman school
Exactly. You'd have to go, I don't know where you would go for that, but your Shakespeare in the Park acting class might teach you how to interact, it might teach you how to improv better or whatever, but it's not going to teach you how to look like some guy just stabbed a knife in your back.
I don't know.
Shakespeare Mike. Bad example. But it's not going to teach you how to make it that convincing.
No.
Look at the masters of looking like they're hurt when they're not.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So if you play a victim role or you like playing a victim role, take a moment, watch a few matches, see how they sell it. See what you can do, what you can incorporate from that.
Yeah.
And like I said, they're especially good at like injuries with like legs or arms or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see professional wrestlers, like someone gets their arm worked on a lot.
Yeah.
They'll pop up and the arm's just like dangling there awkwardly and they're all trying to clutch it.
Yeah.
It's a convincing sell and it looks really good. Okay, in a similar vein to that, though, is bumping.
Yep.
Now, this one probably should not come up too often in a Han, but there are some roles that do require some degree of stunt work.
Right.
If it does, wrestlers basically have something called bumping, which is where they take a hit or a fall.
Yeah.
They fall on the ground, they fall off the top rope, they take a move, whatever. It's a bump. Wrestling is basically an art on how to take these bumps safely and then sell them.
Yes.
Like they hurt.
Yes, to make them look very unsafe.
Yeah, make them look very, very unsafe. So yes, if a role requires any kind of stunt work, then wrestling can teach you more about how to do it safely.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, we're all about safety on this show.
Right.
And the thing about it is this, is we've seen haunts that have done, actors have done things to each other that I don't really know and fathom how you do it. Dozens or hundreds of times in a night and not completely break yourself.
Right.
But the flip side...
Please don't break yourself.
Yeah, please don't break yourself. But we also see situations where people like are pretend murdered.
Right.
And they have to fall to the ground.
Yeah.
Well, falling to the ground, even the simple act of pretending to be dead...
Oh, yeah.
Dozens or hundreds of times a night can be very dangerous.
Oh, yeah.
Can be very painful. So if you don't want to come up the next morning with bruises everywhere...
Or a broken toe.
Or... Oh, God. Yes. That was a jiu-jitsu seminar you broke it in, wasn't it?
Yeah. I tried to help my partner get me to the ground because she couldn't do it.
I will testify, you were almost impossible to take to the ground.
Yeah.
You don't want to go down. You're not going.
Yeah.
It's just not happening.
Yeah.
But yeah. But that's something to think about, though, is if you have even mild, fairly mild stunts, you want to be able to do it repeatedly. You want to be able to do it safely.
Right.
Professional wrestling has exactly what they do. You know, sometimes up to 4 matches per week.
Yeah.
Taking these bumps day after day after day and not, you know, getting killed in the process.
Right.
That's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we can definitely learn about that. I guess some of the key lessons from there would be how to land on your back, how to land properly.
Yeah. How to roll into a fall.
How to roll into a fall and things like that. And some of it's very, very simple stuff. You can probably also pick it up at some self-defense classes.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
But yeah, another potential thing to pick up. Now, this is one of the big ones for me, this next one. Hope spots and false finishes.
Yeah.
One thing I've noticed in a lot of haunts, and I was actually really thinking about this.
I did too. I had an idea.
Oh, for our haunt?
No.
Oh, okay.
But you can finish and then okay. I'll tell it.
But one of the things I had, one of the things I've noticed is that when we go to a haunt, they can be very, very scary, but it's at times one note-ish.
Right.
You're going through, it's scare, yeah. Exit. There's never a break from that. There's never a mental relief. And the problem with that is someone like, you know, me, or even just like a regular customer, is going to put the shields up after they get scared the first time.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to work harder and harder and harder to break through those shields.
Right.
Give them a moment of relief. Let them come down. Then it's easy to get them again. You don't have to break through that barrier. So in wrestling, one thing to do are called hope spots and false finishes. These are moments where the eventual loser of the match looks like they're going to win.
Yeah.
They hulk up and make a big comeback, and then they get that 1, 2, 7/8 pin.
Yeah.
Whatever. Oh, God, that was so close.
And so you just,
you believe it's over. You think, oh, he's going to win now. No, not over. It's just, it's so close. But it turns the emotion of the match. If, you know, the good guy is winning, the face is winning.
Yeah.
Then, it puts real danger into that victory, that seemingly imminent victory.
Yeah.
And if it's the other way around, which is more useful in our situation, it makes it feel like, hey, he's got a chance. We should get emotionally invested in this again. So that way, when the heel does win,
right,
it's more of a crushing defeat.
Yeah. Yeah. I actually was counting, because it used to be fairly formulaic which mm-hmm. one would win, and yeah. whichever one got the first pin was the one to win at the end, usually.
Yeah.
But no, my idea is you could have an apparent exit to your haunt,
mm-hmm.
the chainsaw guy chasing you out, and then you run into another section of the haunt, another building.
Yeah.
It's not over.
Mm-hmm.
Because that feels like yeah. it's over. When the chainsaw guy chases you, feels like it's over.
Yeah, that's,
if it wasn't over,
yeah.
well, then you would completely screw up the balance of your customer.
And it's especially compelling if you do it in a way that it feels like the haunt's over.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
Like you're having them, like you're chasing them with the chainsaw, they go outside, but the outside path just leads them into another building.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly what I was thinking about.
And that way, it's not actually over. They have, oh, this hope and this relief washes over them, and then they're back inside a haunt.
Yeah.
Now, we've seen haunts play with this a little bit by having a guy in the parking lot,
right.
for example, scare exiting customers.
Yeah.
I don't like the guy in the parking lot.
Yeah, I don't.
I think that creates more danger than it's worth.
Yeah, I do too. And no, I completely agree with that. But if it was something where there was a break and then another scare zone and then a walk to the parking yeah. lot to calm down, then, you know, I'm good with that.
Yeah, the main thing, though, is to use these moments where it feels like people can... And you can do this even within a room.
Yeah.
You get people, get customers coming into a room, you scare them a couple of times, you pop up a couple of scares... They see the exit, and they start going to the exit.
Right.
And then something happens at the exit. I mean, you don't want to, like, directly block the path.
No.
But something, it makes it look like they can't get out that way now.
Yeah, I've seen several times where a character will step in front of the doorway.
Yeah, right at the last second.
Yeah. And that's pretty effective. Okay, I've seen it several times, but not often to be a trope.
Yeah.
Often enough to be a trope, so...
Yeah. But this idea of using these hope spots and false finishes, these ideas where you give them hope, you give them a way out, you give them an escape...
Right.
...and then take it away.
Yeah.
That builds an emotional investment into it. Because whenever you're doing a monotone experience, which is just scare,
right.
people get dulled to it.
Yeah.
They need peaks, they need valleys.
Yeah. What if... You know,
we've got Crystal in full excitement mode, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I'm feeling good for the first time today. I had a headache all day. But, no. So, what if you had a victim, like, chained up or something, and the key was in sight, and all she had to do was convince you to let her out? And you did, and either she turned on you, or the killer came in at that point, and they both turned on you. because that would be flipping the script too.
Yeah. Yeah, there's lots of ways you can flip the script on this and use these spots in order to make people think they're safe for a moment.
Yeah.
And then you take it away from them.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, I've been through so many really good haunts where there was just no respite.
Right.
There was, and even like the breaks, even like the lows didn't feel like lows because they didn't feel like escapes. They didn't feel like you were leaving.
Right.
In fact, the most common time, like 13th Gate, the most common time you get respite there is when you're entering a new scene.
Right.
When you're entering a new sequence, there's usually like a 30-second to a minute build-up, which, by the way, is excellent.
Yeah.
That really lets the eeriness and the atmosphere sink in.
Right.
That's a good thing. But to do this, if you did the same toward the exit,
right,
where you can see that you're leaving the sequence and that you're done, and then once right at the very end,
yeah,
you can use this to your advantage, and that's something that professional wrestling has done masterfully. They are, WWE in particular, historically, I don't know about now, but they were masters of psychology on this.
Right.
And getting people hyped up into something and then just taking it away from them.
Yeah.
Basically, they're dicks that get paid to be dicks.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's kind of our job too in a way.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit of it. So yeah, that to me is just something that I think we really can learn, because there are very, very few matches where one guy does all the butt kicking for the entire 5-minute match.
Yeah.
Those are called squash matches. They don't use them much anymore. Mm-hmm. The whole idea is that, you know, you want to have the other guy have a chance, otherwise nobody gets invested in it.
Right.
Same idea with haunting, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Promos.
Mm-hmm.
Front of house people, listen to what I'm talking about here.
Yeah.
Watch some wrestling and watch some of the great promo masters of all time.
Right.
Because, especially the in-ring ones, specifically, the backstage ones are a little less impressive. Listen,
yeah.
The ones where the wrestler goes out there with a mic and works the crowd.
Yeah.
Watch those.
They're talking directly to people.
And they're getting the reaction. They're feeding off of it in real time. It's a very, very powerful thing. Mm-hmm. They're like The Rock, obviously, legendary in-ring promos.
Right.
Steve Austin, too. Stone Cold Steve Austin back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, these promo guys are just absolutely bananas. But I got to say, my personal pick for best promo, if you want to get a crowd pissed off.
Yeah.
The Dudley Boys.
Okay. Yeah. See, I always hated the preacher that came out with The Undertaker.
Oh, Paul Bearer?
Paul Bearer.
Yeah.
Paul Bearer. I hated that guy.
Yeah, you weren't alone in that one.
Yeah.
No, but for getting people...
Loved Undertaker.
Yeah, Undertaker's awesome.
But
I hope Paul he enjoys Bearer. His retirement.
Yes.
But with the Dudleys, I was actually at a ECW house show in Columbia, South Carolina, the same one I got knocked unconscious at.
Yeah.
Which is a lengthy
story for another time.
Story for another time. If there's any interest in hearing about the time I got knocked unconscious at a wrestling match, I'll tell the story.
Yeah.
Or
just put a link to where they can buy the video and watch
it. Oh, God. And watch my near fatal injury. Yeah, it was caught on camera.
Yeah.
Ooh, dolly. But yeah. But I was at that hell show. I swear to God, I thought the Dudleys were going to cause a riot.
Yeah.
They knew how to push every button. They were working the crowd to a T.
Right.
And it was masterful work.
Mm-hmm.
God, the truly great promo guys in wrestling are something all front of house people in haunted attractions can learn from.
Right.
And in a weird way, I think a lot of them actually picture themselves as when they're doing the role.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's been a few times as Bernie I pictured myself doing promos.
Yeah.
Just because it's an easy way to hype yourself up to do it.
Right.
But watching them, you'll learn the cadence, you'll learn the rhythm, you'll learn the body language, and you'll learn how to respond to what the crowd's doing.
Right.
Crowd's chanting against you, you can turn that around. You know, the ways to engage and keep the crowd engaged. Yeah, the way I like to think of it, it's public speaking on hard mode.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what front of house work is.
Yeah.
If you are working a crowd and using your words rather than your scares, you can't ask for better teachers than a lot of these wrestlers. You just literally can't.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Take some time. Watch some of the great promo artists. learn. Okay. Also, Shawn Michaels, going back to him, another great promo guy. Sorry. Okay, promotion and hype.
Yeah.
If there's one thing professional wrestling does really, really, really damn well, it is promoting and hyping.
Yeah.
I mean, they set up events, can convince people it's important.
Right.
Now, how do they do that? Well, it's not just about being the biggest, the baddest, and the best. You know, they don't advertise WrestleMania as, come see the best wrestling show
in
the world. No, what they do is they set up a story that's going to have a payoff or a conclusion at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
See the epic conclusion of the feud between The Rock and Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Right.
And you know it's going to be a good match because you know those are good wrestlers, but you're going to see how it ends.
Yeah.
So they set up a mystery that you can only get the answer to by watching the event.
Right.
And that is a very powerful thing. A little bit of mystery goes a long, long way.
Yeah, we love mystery as humans.
Yes, we do. We love it and we can't... It rots in our brain. It's like nature abhors a vacuum, and a mystery creates a vacuum in our brain that we have to fill with the answer.
Yeah.
It is so compelling. People don't plunk down money to watch these wrestling pay-per-views because they're the best darn wrestling shows.
Right.
They want to see how these stories resolve.
Yeah.
And you can do that with your haunt. Come see what happens when blank.
Yeah.
Fill in the blank.
Yeah. Or do a series of little mini YouTube videos that tell a story that say, will they survive?
Yeah.
And then have, and this is important, to include the payoff in your haunt.
Yeah.
Have those characters in your haunt somewhere. Did they survive or are they hanging on the walls?
Yeah.
Because I know that at least one haunt promoted, it's going to give it away. So, Mortuary promoted so-and-so's coming to dinner, and we've talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
It wound up being, you know, a character from a stock video.
Oh, yeah.
So, I was looking for this character, because I'm like, this is a stock video. I know it's a stock video. Did they take the time to actually make a character that looks similar and have him at a freaking dinner table?
Nope.
No. They didn't.
Which is bad, but they have like six dinner tables.
I know. It would have been fairly easy, but they didn't. Yeah. So, if you're going to do a build-up, definitely have the payoff. Don't leave your audience hanging.
This is why story can be very important to a haunt, though, is if you set up a story where you can only see the conclusion in the haunt, people will come to the haunt, not just to get scared. They know they're going to get scared. They know that's part of the package.
Yeah.
But now you've given them a mystery and a reason to go and a reason to keep their eyes open.
Right.
So, yeah, if you can get people personally invested in this mystery, they'll go to your haunt. They'll pay for your tickets.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. But, yeah. So, yes, that's something that wrestling has done amazingly well over the years. And I think we can definitely learn from that as an industry.
Yeah.
All right. So, one of the negative things... the main negative thing.
Yeah.
Is the danger of targeting just one audience.
Right.
According to most estimates, there are, right now in the United States, are only between 2 to 3 million paying wrestling fans in a nation of over 320 million people.
Right.
So less than 1% of people are paying wrestling fans. That was not always the case.
No.
You go back to like the territory days, for example, you would have small towns selling out in the multi-thousand seat arenas.
Oh, yeah.
Every week.
Oh, yeah. I went to several wrestling shows of different scales.
Yeah.
You know, a couple of the really big ones
mm-hmm.
and a lot of little local ones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been to one wrestling show in a high school auditorium in St. Matthews, South Carolina. I think there were more wrestlers than attendees.
Yeah, I saw the Junkyard Dog in his later years at one of those.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. I think I saw Junkyard. I think I saw him at a WCW show once. But yeah, you know, those little house shows, you can sometimes catch some pretty big names still.
Right. Or people on the up and rising.
Oh, exactly.
So.
But yeah, I mean, think about it like this, though. The WWE Network right now has just under 2 million subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
And pretty much anyone who's a paying wrestling fan probably has a subscription to that.
Yeah.
And less than 1.7 million of those subscriptions are paid. That means the rest are trial.
Right.
Are in the free trial phase. Yeah, previously wrestling was much bigger. There were closures. There were consolidations. And as that was happening, wrestling began to focus almost entirely on its core audience.
Yeah.
Because those are the audience that was spent the most.
Right.
You know, you can get, you know, $200 a year from a hardcore fan, where a casual fan might buy a couple tickets and go to a show, but it's only going to be worth, you know, like $50 a year, we'll say.
Yeah.
And they eventually created a product that basically appealed only to that core audience and pushed away the casual fans.
Right.
And now the base of wrestling has shrunk considerably, and when fans like we did drop out,
yeah,
there's no one to replace them.
No.
And we,
no, because we're not showing it to our kids or anything.
No. I mean, and that's just it. How do you grow new wrestling fans?
Right.
Older wrestling fans introduce younger wrestling fans.
Right.
They bring their friends sometimes.
That's how haunters do it, too.
Yeah. And so. And the danger of that for haunting is that we are currently in a time where we are focusing more and more on the core audience.
Yeah.
We are providing experiences geared almost solely to one type of customer.
Yeah.
And that's a real danger down the road.
Yeah, and that's older teens to early 30s.
Yeah.
So, and that range is where we're targeting.
Yeah, we're talking targeting that range. We're talking people that like particularly gory,
yeah,
very aggressive haunting.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things is it also creates what's known in wrestling is hot-shotting.
Yeah.
Which is when you go over the top. You have the really bloody extreme matches. You have the crazy storylines.
Yeah. Yeah, my mom actually stopped watching wrestling for about 10 years after Undertaker and Kane set each other on fire. So that was the point.
Yeah, that was the breaking point for her. But yeah, when you have that moment of hot-shotting, eventually the part of the problem is you have nowhere higher to go.
Yeah.
I mean, we already have haunts like the Blackout, McKinney Manor, and so forth.
Yeah.
How much harder core do we go?
Yeah. Why do we need more than a few of those?
Yeah, why do we... Yeah, I mean, and that's just it. No. So yeah, we need to find ways to bring in casual fans.
Right.
And now one way that I've seen work successfully here in New Orleans...
Mm-hmm.
Is by tethering haunts to sort of the city.
Yeah.
This is a New Orleans tradition.
Right.
And in this town, we all about tradition.
Yeah, we are.
Perhaps a little bit too much sometimes.
Yeah.
But we're all about traditions, and that's a very powerful way to get fans that maybe aren't super interested in the haunt, but maybe enjoy the experience enough to come by and buy a ticket.
Right. Well, and I would also say another way that this is something that escape rooms are actually helping with, because a lot of places have escape rooms that are targeted at younger audiences.
Yeah.
And families. Yeah. If you give family discounts, then families are coming in and kids are getting introduced to the type of build that you do and your scene design and stuff.
Yeah.
And that can be powerful later on.
Yeah. That's something that for the long-term health of this industry, we have to do well. Is get in front of younger people.
Yeah.
Get in front of kids, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And because everyone remembers their first haunt.
Yeah.
The Tri-County Fair in Berkeley, South Carolina. The J.C. haunt. That was my first haunted attraction.
Right.
I went in there with my Aunt Gail and my grandparents.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my first scary memory was a guy in a skeleton costume in a room at a daycare. It was blacked out with a strobe light.
You know,
I was like second grade.
Everybody,
so,
but you know, that's just it. But you were still a kid, and they introduced you to haunting, and that's the thing.
It's like
we were making haunts that very few parents are going to bring their kids to.
Yeah, exactly.
And if kids don't go to haunts as kids, they're not likely to go as adults.
Right.
This is what like cigarette companies figured out. You got to get the kids hooked on the product young.
Well, and the other thing is if kids go to haunts young and the haunt is too adult for them, then it's going to turn them off for later on. Because I know plenty of people who refuse to even come to ours. They're our friends. They refuse to come to ours because they had a bad experience as a kid.
And I'll say this. Through Ellie's step, Ellie, not our, anyways.
Our stepson.
Yeah, our stepson.
It's confusing. It's okay.
It's a confusing relationship. The point is, he's 17.
Yeah.
And we've talked to him and his friends and everyone around him.
Yeah.
That we've been able to get our hands on about haunted attractions.
Yeah.
They're just not interested. And now it could be his specific group of friends. We could have a sample bias problem here.
Yeah, I think that we do, because I think that the new friend that we met this summer was really interested and wants to bring himself and Shawnee down to work in our haunt.
Yeah.
So they want to work in it. They don't necessarily want to go to them, but...
But that is one of the things we have to think about, is how to get this product in front of kids, because when you ignore the casual audience, when you ignore the younger audience, and you ignore those people that aren't your ideal customers, quote-unquote...
Right.
You start diluting the pool. And that's a very real... That's what happened to wrestling. It happened to comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And it could happen to the haunt industry.
Yeah.
If we're not careful.
Yeah.
Okay, and the final thing to talk about... now almost ending perfectly on time, it looks like.
Uh-huh. Wow,
but yes, alternate business models. You know, for all the flack I give WWE, and I give them a lot...
Yeah. Well, they took a lot of their competition away, so...
Yeah, they did. And that's a tradition that goes back pretty much like 40 years.
Yeah.
But anyways, for decades, they were powered by the pay-per-view model.
Right.
Basically, the idea was... You'd have the house shows, you might have some like syndicated television, but once every 4 months, and once every 3 months initially, then every month, you would have a pay-per-view that you'd sell, and you'd get, you know, hundreds of thousands of buys on it, and you'd make a lot of your money that way.
Yeah.
They actually launched the WWE Network in February 2014. It's $10 per month, flat fee, and it includes all the pay-per-views.
Yeah.
So... The thing is, it doesn't matter whether you watch the pay-per-views or not. You're still paying for them.
Right.
But the idea was that even this way, fans can get the pay-per-views much, much more cheaply. Because wrestling pay-per-views were not cheap.
No. They were not. I think we paid for one in my growing up.
I never paid for
ever.
One by myself or my family. I did go to my friend's house and chip in to buy a few.
Gotcha.
In fact, my favorite one I saw live... was King of the Ring 1996 when Austin 316 was invented.
Yeah.
That was an awesome moment to watch that live.
Mm-hmm.
And go, oh, crap. I mean, in fact, my very first thought was, that's going to be on a t-shirt tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know what? It was. And it sold like incredible amounts, too.
Yes, it did.
But yeah, this exploration of alternate business models is a really interesting thing, and it seems to have actually paid off. They've been able to make increased revenue with a dwindling pool of fans, as we mentioned. So they haven't been hurt financially by the fact not as many people are in wrestling, because they're getting more money per fan. Now, still long term, that's a disastrous thing. I don't know how much longer that's sustainable.
Well, and I think part of it is that, you know, fans that are our age, that, you know, aged out of it, not the core group. I'd be interested in going back and seeing, you know, paying for a couple of months and seeing some of the matches I saw as a kid. And,
I thought about doing the free trial, mostly to see, like, some of the old ECW and some of the old Monday Night Raws from the Attitude Era and things like that.
Right. And I could see a family sitting down saying, hey, look, I'm going to show Junior this great highlight from
I
remember.
Yeah, that's a potential great tune. And that's one, I think that to me is the most valuable thing in the WWE Network. I have no interest really in watching the pay-per-views and all that. I don't think I'm really interested in picking it up as a fan again.
Right, it'd take too much time.
And that's my honest to God reason. I don't have 5 hours every flipping week, 8 hours on pay-per-view weeks
right.
to sit there and watch wrestling. I just don't.
Yeah.
But yeah, that and the plots I've been reading about and been trying to keep up a little bit on what's like going on and who's who.
Yeah.
The plots just aren't that interesting to me. Not enough to spend that much time. But anyways, the archive footage is the real value to me or someone like me.
Right.
I could see going through and reliving a lot of those memories like you talked about.
Yeah, and I could see that being a way to introduce new fans.
Yeah.
So
that's a good point. That is how you can introduce new fans, is by maintaining that. But obviously we can't maintain archived haunts.
No.
But That is an interesting idea that I didn't think about. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I admit it, wrestling is a silly thing, as we talked about.
Yes.
But it's a non-traditional storytelling medium that has some overlap with what haunts do.
Right.
And depending upon the type of actor you are in particular, there's things you can learn from wrestling. Victim actors can learn how to sell injuries. Front of house guys and talkie dudes can learn an amazing amount from the good promo masters.
Right.
Yeah, when you're as good as The Rock on the mic, hey, you probably won't be working in a haunted house. You'll probably have something else. You'll be doing the haunted house stuff for fun, basically.
Yeah, basically. At that point.
So, yeah, but the point of the matter is there's stuff we can learn from this, and just because wrestling is a little silly doesn't mean we shouldn't learn from it. Doesn't mean we shouldn't look to it, because, hey, here's the thing. Haunting is kind of silly, too.
Yep.
And that's just it. If you enjoy wrestling, you know, that's something you enjoy. That's great. And, you know, I think most things I think we find enjoyable are on some level silly.
Yeah.
Football is silly. Both soccer and American football are silly. If you break them down to what the actual sport is.
Yeah.
You're trying to get a ball to one side of a field.
Yeah.
It's silly. Me saying it's silly is not a knock on wrestling, to be completely clear.
Yeah.
I have a lot of very good memories from when I did watch it. I did really enjoy it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I left it or if it left me.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of both. I mean, I ended up leaving 98, 99, right as I was in college. And I went to the, I think it was closer to 2000, actually, when I finally really fully dropped out of it. But did it leave me or I leave it? I don't know. But regardless, it's still something that I know has influenced the way I haunt, because a lot of my internal references, a lot of my internal visions.
Right.
When I'm in front of house, when I'm working in front of house in front of a large crowd, I am The Rock up there giving the talk. I'm Ric Flair. I'm that guy.
Yeah.
I'm doing it. That's what pops into my head. So yeah, it's been an influence on the way I haunt, even though I haven't actually watched a full wrestling show in damn near 20 years.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's all I wanted to talk about today. You got anything else you want to add?
You found a couple of podcasts that are wrestling related for the wrestling fans that are listening.
Oh yeah.
And a couple of YouTube shows.
Yeah, I'll put some interesting ones in the link. But basically, I've been listening to a lot of Jim Cornette's work. He has multiple podcasts. For those who don't know, Jim Cornette was a wrestling manager / valet from back in the day, so to speak, 80s and 90s. And he is a goddamn amazing storyteller.
He is.
Even if you have no interest in wrestling, his stories he tells are hilarious nine times out of ten. And I would like to go on record saying I will personally buy the Jim Cornette burger towel if it is ever released.
Yeah. Look it up.
Look it up. Look up Jim Cornette burger towel. You will not be disappointed.
Yeah.
It is every bit as weird. This is Jim Cornette, though. There's lots of foul language. Maybe don't listen to those in an office.
Yeah.
But yes, other than that, it is completely enjoyable.
Headphones exist for a reason.
Yes, they do, folks. But yeah, so definitely check that out. If you're interested for something else to listen to. But that's neither here nor there. Once again, Halloween and Haunt Fest.
Yes.
August 25th through 27th. We will be there. I will be speaking. We will both be in attendance. We'll be waving the microphone under the nose of anyone willing to speak words and do it.
Yes.
So feel free to swing by, get recorded for posterity or posterior. I'm not sure which. And hang out. Yeah, we're looking forward to this. This is going to be a great conference. I'm super duper excited. We actually ordered Haunt Weekly polo shirts.
Yes.
I'm not making this up. They should be here like in a couple of days, shouldn't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, we actually ordered Haunt Weekly polo shirts and got expedited shipping.
So we look like we're professional and stuff.
I know, and we're going to totally snow people. But yes, do come and check us out there. Also, check us out Twitter, Haunt Weekly, on Facebook at Haunt Weekly, or on iTunes, Google Play, and all the other fine podcast retailers. But until next time, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode number 89, What Haunting Can Learn from Professional Wrestling. We will see you guys next time.